thank you very much, Mr. President, and it's a particular pleasure for me to see you in the chair of our meeting this morning, and congratulations on assuming your important office. Of course, you can be assured of the full cooperation of my delegation as you discharge your important duties. Before going into my prepared statement, Mr. President, I just want to react to a couple of things that we've just heard from the Russian delegation. It was the usual litany of self-serving distortions, which bear no relation to reality. I won't try and refute them all because, as the delegate of the Russian Federation pointed out, we only have a single day for this meeting. But I would like to pick up on two points of fact. The first, and this is not the first time I've corrected the delegate of the Russian Federation on this point, in the 2021 integrated review, the United Kingdom announced that it was going to increase the ceiling, the cap, on its nuclear warhead stockpile from 225 to 260. There are two important points to note with this. The first is that this is a cap. This is not a target. This is not the number of the size of our stockpile. This is the number beyond which we will not go. It is not the number we actually have. The second point, as all of you who've done any basic arithmetic will realize, is that 225 to 260 is an increase of 15%, not a fourth, as I believe he said. I've picked him up on this before, but obviously need to keep on doing that. The second point I wanted to make was, the second point of fact I wanted to correct, was the characterization that he gave, that I think he said the provocative action of the collective West in unleashing war in Ukraine. Now, as I recall, Mr. President, it was the Russian Federation that invaded Ukraine, that mounted a full-scale illegal invasion of Ukraine on the 22nd of February 2022. Now, that, I believe, Mr. President, was an act of war. It was an act of aggression, which is illegal under the UN Charter. It was certainly provocative, but it was not the West that did that, Mr. President. It was the Russian Federation, despite, I have to remind us all, of protestations going back weeks before that the build-up of Russian troops on the border was nothing more than an exercise. Indeed, I believe his own foreign minister and defence minister made those assurances as well. Now, if we're going to get into accusations, let's at least get the fact right. And I think this is particularly important for a member of a permanent member of the UN Security Council, which, as the delegate of the Russian Federation reminded us, have special responsibility for international peace and security. That special responsibility is not discharged by unleashing unprovoked and illegal wars of aggression. Now, Mr. President, to get back to the matter in hand, the United Kingdom is proud of our contribution to the reductions in the global stockpile of nuclear weapons and to the goal of nuclear disarmament under strict and effective international control with undiminished security for all. Since the end of the Cold War, the UK has approximately halved its stockpile, which is now the smallest of the nuclear weapon states, and we are the only nuclear weapon state to have reduced our deterrent capability to a single delivery system. We have reduced the salience of nuclear weapons in our national security doctrines and policies to the maximum extent possible in the current international security environment, and repeatedly emphasized our commitment to honoring our negative security assurances. We strive for the greatest level of transparency in our nuclear doctrines, policies, and capabilities, consistent with our national security and non-proliferation responsibilities. We'll have more to say on this point at our next plenary meeting. The Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, of course, provides the indispensable framework within which the disarmament process is possible. Within that framework, the only credible path to nuclear disarmament is through incremental, mutually reinforcing steps. Many of those will take place outside this conference: renewed arms control negotiations between the nuclear weapon states with the largest arsenals, bringing into force the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, strengthening nuclear weapon-free zones, and redoubling our efforts to counter the proliferation of nuclear weapons. We know well, of course, the challenges we face on each of these fronts. What then is the role of this conference in pursuing the negotiations on nuclear disarmament that we are all committed to? There is, of course, one major immediate step that could, must be taken here: launching negotiations on a non-discriminatory, multilateral, and internationally and effectively verifiable treaty banning the production of fissile material for use in nuclear weapons or other nuclear explosive devices. This would be a vital step in making reductions in nuclear weapons and in establishing many of the mechanisms that would constitute the core of an eventual regime to oversee a world without nuclear weapons. There is no conceivable path to a world without nuclear weapons that does not include a fissile material cutoff treaty. The UK played an active role in the UN Group of Government Experts in 2014-2015, in the high-level fissile material cutoff treaty expert preparatory group in 2017-2018, and in subsidiary body two of this conference in 2018 and 2022. All those processes deepened the dialogue on an FMCT and identified the issues upon which future negotiators will need to focus. While we are ready to continue these discussions, whether in a further subsidiary body of this conference or in the context of the transparency and confidence-building measures envisaged in General Assembly Resolution 78/28 adopted last year, the only place these issues can be resolved now is in a formal negotiation in this conference. It is clear from the mandate contained in document CD1299 that all outstanding issues, including the question of the scope of the treaty, can be addressed during the course of negotiations. We deplore the ongoing insistence on deciding key questions such as this as a condition for beginning negotiations. Mr. President, my delegation believes that this conference also has a role to play in preparing the ground for longer-term measures, so that we are ready to seize the opportunity when the political and security circumstances allow. As the single multilateral negotiating forum on nuclear disarmament, our membership, structure, and working methods allow us, if we choose, to leverage the expertise and perspectives present in this room to make real progress. That would be even more the case, of course, if Russia had not blocked 15 UN member states from participating in our work as observers, a move which severely hampers the effectiveness and credibility of this body. By establishing subsidiary bodies or appointing facilitators to consult on items on our agenda on which there is not yet an agreed mandate for launching formal negotiations, this conference can contribute to work on the technical, political, legal, military, and institutional challenges we will need to overcome as we move to smaller global arsenals and from there to zero in ways which enhance national and international security. A world without nuclear weapons will require an extremely robust multilateral framework or set of agreements and arrangements founded on the established principles of transparency, verification, and irreversibility. While it is difficult today to define what all the elements of this eventual framework will look like, we can conduct exploratory work to apply those principles in practice. Mr. President, nuclear disarmament is a vital, complex endeavour. In the current dangerous circumstances, we must work hard to ensure that we do not lose or reverse the progress we have made, as well as keeping our focus on the challenges to come. The NPT and this conference are the two indispensable institutions we have to pursue this work and to make that prospect eventually a reality. Thank you.